l'école du jeu, en partenariat avec la boutique L'Imaginaire. Au-delà de vos attentes.
Bonjour, mon patin artistique, c'est Vince de l'école du jeu. Et aujourd'hui, je suis en présence, je suis très très fier, je suis honoré de participer à une entrevue avec un des grands de l'industrie, une personne que l'on ne voit pas souvent, que l'on ne mentionne pas souvent sur le couvert des boîtes, mais qui a définitivement révolutionné l'industrie. C'est un homme qui a débuté sa compagnie il y a de cela fort longtemps, une petite compagnie qui se nommait Z-Man Games et qui, lentement mais sûrement, a pu se faire une place une très bonne place dans le domaine de l'industrie du jeu et qui par la suite a continué à faire de l'édition de jeux et toujours à la recherche d'un jeu de société qui va nous faire découvrir une nouvelle expérience ludique. C'est un homme qui a beaucoup à dire sur le jeu de société et maintenant il travaille pour WizKids, une compagnie qui nous a amené des jeux qui personnellement m'ont chaviré, comme par exemple on pourrait parler de Sidereal Confluence, on pourrait parler de Tournament at Kenmot, le nouveau jeu qui vient toujours de sortir qui se nomme Flotilla. Donc un homme qui travaille pour WizKids depuis 2016, il s'agit de monsieur Zev Schlesinger. How are you, Zev?
I'm good. Comment ça va?
Ça va très bien.
Good.
D'ailleurs, un gros chapeau à Antoine Gérin-Lajoie qui nous a composé cette belle petite chanson d'intro pour notre plateforme podcast. Alors, on commence en anglais. So, Zev, first of all, I want to thank you very much. A quick overview of what I've just said for 2 minutes. I gave a small summary of your role through the industry, and then I explained how a lot of things you have been in the industry for many many years, and quite frankly, I must admit I'm very honored because I know that you have changed a lot of things through the years. So first of all, how many years have you been involved in the board game inside the industry, but also outside the industry?
Wow, good question. So you figure I started Z-Man a little over 20 years ago, but I also demonstrated a lot of collectible card games since 1994. I started with demonstrating and playing and going to conventions for Magic the Gathering. So that was 94. And then, of course, I've been a gamer most of my life.
Great. And so Z-Man began, I think it was in the beginning of the 2000s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I formed the company in 1999, and the first published product came out in Gen Con 2000.
And what was the first product?
We did the Shadow Fist collectible card game.
And afterwards, I know that your company got bigger and bigger. What was the was it something that happened slowly through time, or was it just a huge? There has been something that just got the company to a whole other level.
I think it's more slowly through time up until I had a nice 1-2 punch in 2008 when I released Pandemic and Agricola in the same year. That propelled me, that skyrocketed me even further. But it was, I was pretty successful, but slowly up until that point with not one major hit, but a lot of good medium evergreen type hits. You know, I did Duel in the Dark. I did 1960 Making of the President. I did a Prophecy. I licensed No Thanks and Saboteur. I had my B-movie card game series. So there was a lot of little stuff that finally led to 2008 being my very big year.
Yes, it's funny that you're talking about 1960 because I have the French version right in front of my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one I want to try very soon with my wife. So tell me, how did this all begin? So what was your What was your incentive of beginning Z-Man?
I started Z-Man because I wanted to bring back the Shadow Fist collectible card game. So maybe you could say I was a super fan. This game, the company went out of business in 1997, but I love the game. I would go to conventions and always bring out my decks and play with my friends. And finally I said, you know, there's a lot of people still playing this, and I want new cards. Maybe I should do this. And that was the impetus to start Z-Man Games, in order to bring back my favorite collectible card game so that I can keep playing with new stuff.
That's a good incentive. So it started with all of that, and then slowly it ramped up into becoming the board game company that we know nowadays. So how did you change Rails from collectible card game to board game? What was the bridge that you took to change from this from one side to another?
Well, it actually started in 2001. Where somebody pitched me the B-movie card game Grave Robbers from Outer Space. I love B-movies, and it was a funny game. It was in a subject that I really liked. I had to tweak the game. It was actually very slow, so I made one tweak that sped up the game and made it immensely fun, to me at least. And I brought it without fanfare to Gen Con 2001, and we sold out of it with people coming up to me, distributors coming up to me saying, why didn't you tell us about this game? This is amazing. We want more. And what I really liked about it was doing a CCG, a collectible card game, is very hard. It takes a lot of work. It takes a community. There's a lot of play testing. You have to make sure cards are not broken. They're not coasters. There's not infinite loops. There's a lot of work and fact and errata and everything that goes into a collectible card game. So it was a pleasure to do a game that really had no questions whatsoever. And that opened my eyes and said, oh, I should do more of this. This is pretty cool. So I started to look for other things, and people started, once I released Grave Robbers, people started pitching me other non-collectible card games. And that's how I got that's how I did more B-movie games. And then I got my friend Andrew Parks. He showed me Camelot Legends that I was interested in doing, but I couldn't do at the time. So he showed me another game of his, a board game. Really didn't have a board, but it played like a board, called Ideology. And I really liked it. It was a political theme game with influence, but it just played so really good. And I said, all right, you know what, let's do this first, and we'll see about Camelot Legends. And it did very well. And that was really the road. I started releasing more and more of these types of games. And then I started, you know, seeking out licenses, because I was at that time already a member of Board Game Geek. And I saw that a lot of German games were coming over. So I started to make some licenses, and I dealt with Amigo. And I was able to bring over first, I think, Saboteur, and then No Thanks. And those did very well for me.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find these successes? So, for instance, let's talk about Pandemic. What's the story behind Pandemic? Did you find it in a small convention? Was it did the author come with a prototype or anything? How did you come up in relationship with Matt Leacock and Pandemic?
So I started talking with Matt, I believe, in 2007. It could have been late 2006, I'm not sure, but let's say 2007. And at the time, Matt was self-publishing a few of his games. I remember a car racing game, I think it was called Looping something, I don't quite remember. But anyhow, he showed me some games, and then we decided to meet at a convention in April. And there he showed me a game of his that had to do with ants. I don't remember the name of it, but I think we were each a colony of ants, and of course trying to make the best colony. And I was playing this like on the last day of the show, and I had to leave as we were scoring, and he said he had another game, a co-op, about curing diseases or whatnot, and I said, well, I have to go, so why don't you send that to me afterwards? And that's what he did. He sent it like a few weeks later, and I believe I even got to test it a few weeks after that. And that's how I discovered Pandemic. My group loved the game. For me, it was the key thing was when an epidemic was about to happen, and everybody got up from their chairs wondering where this epidemic was going to strike. And when I saw that reaction, I said to myself, I have to do this game.
Wow. Very interesting. And now we know Pandemic for the success that it has been.
Yeah.
So I want to go back a little bit back in time. So let's talk about 1960 with Jason Matthews and the other author was Christian Leonard. Both of these authors were kind of known, especially for 12-Hand Struggle. Did you actually approach them for their games, or did they come up to you once again?
I believe I approached Jason, and yes, he did Twilight Struggle, but it wasn't with Christian. That one that he did with a gentleman, his last name I believe was Gupta. I don't remember the first name. I have the game right within arm's length. Ananda Gupta, that's it, yes.
Yes.
But yeah, I approached Jason because obviously Twilight Struggle was very hot. That was the, you know, the darling that one of Board Game Geek. I think that became number one, right? I think that one displaced Puerto Rico, I think, or certainly went high up there. But yeah, I approached Jason and I asked him, hey, what else have you got? If there's anything of interest, please let me know. And then he told me that he was working on a game with another designer, author, and he told me what it was. And I said, hey, I'll try it. I'm interested. And that's how he did it, you know. But so it was really, you know, I tried to be as proactive as possible. I went to people wherever I could to find out, you know, what they had, what was available, and so on.
I now realize something while talking with you. Zeman was before Agricola. Zeman was very focused for card games, for Ameritrash, immersive games. And then came up Agricola. Was this something that was voluntary on your part, that you wanted Zeman to have a few euros behind the belt?
Well, let me tell you a story. It might be long and boring, so cut it as you see fit. So it got to the point, I don't know, I think it was around 2003 or 2004. So I started noticing the trend of board games becoming more and more popular. And I saw this glut coming. I saw there was going to be a bunch of board games out there. And it was my goal to be among one of the premier board game publishers when that happened, so that when that there were so many games out there, people would say, well, you know what, I'm only going to buy from these top three companies or top five companies. And that's what I strove to do, to be part of that. So that's one part of the story where I actively went out to become, you know, one of the best board game companies out there. So the other thing is, in order to do that, I had to make myself known. I've been going to Essen since 2000. I've done other shows, and I've met publishers, and I'm talking with them, and I'm trying to, you know, license as much as I can. I had a relationship with Amigo, but, you know, obviously there were a few people who were there before me, Rio Grande obviously being one of the bigger names, and he had locked up a lot of the other big German publishers. So I had to go somewhere he wasn't going. So I had to find people who were new, who were in, you know, who had other product. And of course, also with Board Game Geek help, I was trying to see what other people were looking to have in their collection. And the games that came up in that was End of the Triumvirate and the Scepter of Zavendor. Both of them, right? And both of them were Lookout games. So I established a relationship with Lookout games, and I brought End of the Triumvirate and Scepter of Zavendor to the English language market. So that is the beginning, really, of the Agricola story, because I had such a good relationship with Lookout when, like, what's that, about two or three years later, when they released Agricola and Essen, I was the top of their list. They were approached by many, many people, but the owner of Lookout said, well, Z-Man gets first cracked at it. If he doesn't want it, then I'll talk to others, but he is going to be the first one to choose. And even though they showed me the game the year before, it was all in German, and I just got an idea of what the game was about. I got to know more of it, obviously, when it was released in Essen. And what's funny is the owner of Lookout kept sending people over to my booth saying, you got to do this game, you got to do this game, you got to do this game. And I'm like, yes, I'll do it, I promise, I'll do it. And that was it. So it was my relationship and my desire to grow my company to be a board game, a well-known board game company, whether it be Euro and Ameritrash, whatever, was establishing my relationship with Lookout and then being the first to choose to do Agricola or not. And, of course, I chose to do it.
That's really interesting. Actually, I'm not going to cut it all. Trust me.
I made it a little shorter. I could have gone longer, but that's fine.
But you can go as long as you want. You know, you're the guest of honor.
Thank you.
So I'm going forward a little bit in time. So in 2011, you decided to, I think you decided to sell Z-Man, if I'm not mistaken, to Philosophia. Am I right?
Almost. I sold to Sophie, not Philosophia. She happened to also own Philosophia, but I sold it to her.
Okay, and what was the motive? What pushed you to decide to sell your company at this point?
Well, it came out of nowhere. I wasn't really looking to sell the company. She sent me an email that sort of like fished for information, and it started something like, "Hey, I heard you were looking to sell your company. Let's talk." And I was not looking to sell it, but I found it interesting, and I was like, well, okay, we can always talk. What's harm in talking? I was not planning to do it. It was just something that was that just landed in my email, my inbox, and then it made me think about it. And, after talking and so on, it became attractive because I was pretty much doing Z-Man myself. I was, running the company. I was doing the day-to-day operations. I was, invoicing, sales calls, sometimes even shipping stuff. I was doing customer service myself. And then, of course, going out to shows, finding games, helping to develop games. And the prospect of somebody taking the day-to-day operations off my hands became very attractive. And that's what ultimately lent my decision to go to sell the company.
Did you have time to sleep while doing all of that?
A lot of people ask me that. I know I did, but it did seem like I wasn't, especially when I was releasing like 30, 35 games a year.
Yes, but that's quite a lot still for one person, one man army. Let's just call it like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then from then you still worked with Z-Man up until 2016. Were you more involved with edition or publishing? What were you doing mostly in the company by the time you sold it?
Well, I was still the face of the company, of course, but my main job was acquisition, in effect. Basically doing the what I like to do mostly, which is find games, develop them, and prepare them to be published in the marketplace. So I would test games and everything, and then I would give it to my team at Z-Man, to Sophie, to all the people there, and say, all right, I think this is a game you should publish. And then I'd go on to the next one. And obviously I gave advice. They asked me for advice, and I, you know, answered what I could. I gave my advice on components, on printing, on price points, on marketing, and so on. But my main function was finding games.
Okay. And I know that since that time, a lot of expansion for Pandemix, for instance, that was in your catalog very often. Also, a few other Euro games appeared. Expansions for Ricola once again, Caverna. I think it was in 2013.
Not Caverna. Caverna was Mayfair.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry, I apologize.
No problem.
Then afterwards, were you behind all of these expansions? Or what was your thought about all of these expansions? Did you think it was a good idea to expand the game to that level?
So when I when I owned Z-Man, I did the base game and I did On the Brink. So that was the thing. I had no other expansions planned, but at the time I did sign what became Reign of Cthulhu, I believe. It wasn't going. I don't know if I was gonna call it Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu. I think it was just gonna be, you know, a Cthulhu game with a pandemic type. Mechanic, and also Matt helped work on that, and he gave feedback, and he tested it, and so on. So that was already in the queue when I sold the company. And then the other stuff, the In the Lab, and the State of Emergency, and then the Dice Game, that was all Sophie expanding the brand. Honestly, I'm not a big expansion guy. I'm the kind of... I'm a gamer myself. I like having everything in a box. So my feeling is, if I am going to do an expansion, if I could put it in the main box, I would prefer that. And then I'm happy being done with it. And I know that's kind of contradictory because doing a collectible card game, for example, is an expansion model, right? You need the new cards every year in that. But that's a different type of game. I felt a board game, you know, worked as it did and so on. I'm probably in the minority because expansions are everywhere. So I probably would not have expanded the brand as much as Sophie did.
Okay, I understand. Before we move to your transfer to WizKids, were there games that you actually found or that you discovered that you wished so really, really hard to publish, but actually never got into Z-Man?
Yes. And what's interesting is they got into WizKids. I'll say two, for example, was Rock Paper Wizard, and the other was the Sidereal Confluence. Both those I presented to Z-Man. They passed on it, and when I went to WizKids, I recontacted these designers, asked if the designs were still available, and when they said yes, I said, all right, I'm doing it, let's go.
Yes, because I know Todd said he actually worked on his game for many, many years, and I know it was a sort of a Twilight Imperium at first, and then it got squeezed up into the last 2 hours and a half, quote-unquote, of his game. As I read his diary, that's what I realized.
Yeah.
Did he show you the whole game, or did he show you only the sidereal part?
Only the sidereal part. I came in after he's cut all that stuff.
Okay. Okay, good. So maybe, and then maybe another question before, again, we move to Wizkids. Are there games, hidden jewels, or Grail games that you think that are amazing that Zeman published but never got as much attention as you would have liked?
I will say yes. If you're going to ask me which ones, I'm going to have to look at my shelf to remind me. Let's see if I can come up with a couple that didn't... well, I think Feudo was one that I thought was an amazing game that, I mean, even though eventually I sold it, but it never got the love that I think it deserved. Let's see. That's a good question. Let's see. I think, I might be wrong now, but Yggdrasil was another one that, while it did okay, it didn't blaze any trails, even though they are releasing a new version of it. I think Yggdrasil Heroes or something. But it never did so well that that there was an immediate need to keep that in stock, to keep reprinting it. I kind of regret it. I wish I did do at least a reprint of it. But, that's that. Let's see. There's probably a couple of others that I thought was going to do well. Oh, actually, I thought the follow-up Jason's game, the Campaign Manager, I think, Campaign Manager 2008.
Yes.
That one, I took a chance. Yeah, that one I took a chance on. I thought it was a surefire hit, but it was not.
That's for sure. That's something that should have been more popular for sure. Such a simple game, but very very thinky, and especially to the point that you're actually building your deck. That was very, very brilliant, I must say.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought it for sure that was a given. That was one of my wrong guesses, and when I say wrong, it's because I printed way more. Then I printed a lot more than I normally do because I thought for sure it would make, it would reach that level, and it never came close. Mm-hmm. So that one hurt me in business sense. And again, there's probably a few others Earth Reborn I love, mm-hmm. and I had hoped that the Ameritrashers would have really glommed onto it, and even some of the, the Euro... plan, because there were some nice, interesting Euro elements and stuff, but it did okay. It was slow, but that's another one I took a big chance on, and it didn't meet its the respect and the demand I thought it would. Although I think over the years it finally reached a point where it probably sold out, but by that time I already had sold Z-Man, so we're talking a few years. So yeah, that's just a few of the ideas. And I'm sure there's a few. There's always some that that you expected to do better for whatever reason, and just was okay or just not as well. I never had a major failure kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Just those that didn't sell as well as I would hope because I thought the game was really, really good.
Mm-hmm. All right, I understand. Okay, well, Earth Reborn, fun fact, I had it for a couple of months, and then, I don't know why, I never played it, and then I decided to do a map trade, and then it got traded, and it's unfortunate now, I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, oh, well, I should have tried it at least. So let's move on to Wizkids. Now you decided to move to Wizkids. Was there a specific reason why you switched from Z-Man to Wizkids, or was it just natural? It was just something that was natural that you had to move on to something else in your life?
No, honestly, I was let go at Z-Man.
Okay.
They felt they didn't need my services any longer. And when I announced that I was going to be free, I got a bunch of emails, Facebook messages, and calls asking to talk to me about possible employment. And WizKids was one of those companies that contacted me.
Wow. Okay. So, and then you went with the big guys, WizKids. They're very known for their the HeroClix, which is a kind of collectible games.
Yes.
To them.
Yep.
And also, it's kind of their. It's the game that is the most popular, I think.
Yep.
But what attracted you to WizKids mostly?
Well, the fact that they were going to so first of all, yes, that they had a very good they were solid in the company, right? They were well known. They were. They had a successful game, and with a collectible game, that's really good. So I know they had the capital to support me. And the other thing was the fact that they would allow me to do pretty much what I wanted to do to build their board game catalog. So those factors made me decide to go with them.
Okay, and then from 2016, it's incredible to see the amount of board games that they started to publish. And now we're talking about my the icing on the cake for me in this interview is really Sidereo Confluence. just a small story of mine. I actually got in contact with Toss City. Because I had to do this this presentation for my university degree, and my theme was actually Sidereo Confluence. So I actually needed to talk with him because of all the copyrights and everything. He's a very, very interesting man, and it's sad because I think it was mostly his Opus Dei, so I don't think he's gonna. He didn't mention any upcoming games, but I want to know the full story behind Sidereo Confluence, because now you just piqued my curiosity, saying that you actually saw this game beforehand, before going to WizKids. So how did it all start?
I believe I was at a show. I don't know what year it was, but it was actually the same show where I met Matt Leacock, but not in the same year, I believe. Because it was probably... Yeah, it was probably when I already sold Seaman, so it was probably about 2011 or so. I'm looking for games. I'm always on the lookout. People tell me about the games. People pitch me. And I think he came up to me and or somebody said I should look at this game. And they said, it was a two and a half hour negotiation game. I'm like, okay, interesting. 4 to 9 players with asymmetric alien races. I'm like, ooh, wow, 4 to 9 players. That player count was very intriguing to me. And, I think I made an appointment and sat down with him and learned the game. I think my game was a six or seven player game in which, Tau Ceti officiated. I believe he played as well. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But it was about a 6 or 7 player game, and I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's do it. And I had a great time. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I loved the idea of it. I loved the speed of it for the relative of player count and everything. And I was very intrigued with it right there.
So what caught your attention in Sidereo? Was it negotiation? Was it the resource management? What really got into your gaming? What got you into it?
I think it was definitely the negotiation or the fact that it was the social interaction of negotiation,
yeah,
right? It was this whole, like we're all yelling at a bazaar or an auction, I should say, but without an auction, where everybody's going, I'll give you this, hey, I got this, who wants this? And I thought that was just very cool with all the people and trying to manage it. Everything else was, pretty much, standard. Okay, right, I bid, I get this, I get that. Running your economy, sure, okay, input in, input out. I think I also like the idea of when you create a technology, you share it. I thought that was kind of cool. It's a small thing, but it's I think, very, very cool. And that's it. But I think it's definitely the large player count with a relatively short play time and the interaction within that mechanic of negotiation. Also, I'll add the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't like negotiation because they don't like lying, you know, they don't want to backstab and stuff. So I kind of like the fact that this one, you don't backstab. So it's like Chinatown, right? Mm-hmm. I always call it Chinatown on steroids. That's how I describe the game. You know, it's perfect information. You know what people have. You know, no one's lying. If you say you're going to give them this and you get this, that's what's going to happen. That was good. That was good.
Mm-hmm. I think I have more than 15 games behind the belt, and I just can't stop playing this game.
That's more than me.
I love it. So I want to say thank you very much for making this game a reality. It is for me the perfect definition of what a board game is.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, because I feel that like the interaction that is created is actually in this. I think for me the definition of board game is create interaction and create relationships with people. And you just mentioned the binding agreements in the game. It's actually making the players create alliances in the long term, and this actually creates this synergy between people rather than this cutthroat style of game where I've never finished a game where people were bitter in Citadel Confluence, contrary to Game of Thrones, for example, where
right.
people can go out and say, all right, so we're not going to be friends anymore.
right. Yeah, it's a different type of game. I mean, I don't mind the backstabbing. You know, I've played games where that happens, and it's very fun. But in this case, it works without backstabbing, and it's refreshing and makes it worth playing more in my mind. And it gives people, I think, who don't like negotiation, for the fact that, again, they don't like to lie or they don't like to be cheated or whatnot, that it gives them the strength and the power to just speak up and become more involved than they normally would in a negotiation game.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that you're actually what your outputs are, those resources are not what you actually need, but those resources are actually what other people need. So this gives you an incentive for negotiating.
You brought up a good point. So actually, there's two things I forgot. Right, we just said negotiation, but so the two things are this one. The fact that you need to negotiate to play this game. You can't sit still. If you don't trade, you're not going to win. So there's the game forces you to do it, but it's elegant. It's not mean or anything. It forces you to do it. And then the second thing is the fact that you can trade anything, except, of course, the VP, but you could trade the cards, the colonies, research stuff, your ships. And then of course all the resources. That's also part of what's amazing about it.
Yes, you're right, and also the fact that I like to compare Cosmic Encounter and Sidereal Confluence because they're the same they're the same within two opposite poles. Whereas in Cosmic Encounter is your negotiation and your superpower. They're actually for giving you incentive for negotiating for yourself, whereas your powers in Sidereal Confluence, those are actually made for the good, for the benefits of other people, so you can negotiate to convince them that your power is really, really good for them, rather than saying, all right, if you don't deal with me, then I'm going to destroy you. Rather, it's no, if you deal with me, then it's going to be beneficial for the both of us.
Right.
I think this is something that I really enjoy of the game. And, of course, now that we are in 2020, I think it was in 2019, where we heard that there would be a new edition of the game.
Yes.
What was the reason behind that decision?
Well, I think it's probably twofold. One, we listened to people who felt they did not like the look of the game. Maybe sometimes the graphic design, the cover. I think that was one part of it, and the other part of it was that we want to show people that WizKids is on par, you know, with the other successful publishers, that we can do, you know, nice looking stuff. See, for me, art is subjective anyway, and you know, we can do a whole, you know, podcast on that alone probably, but. I think it was just more to show, okay, hey, look, if people didn't like the way it looked originally, we'll try our best to make it look, you know, beautiful and pretty, and also, again, to show people that WizKids is a publisher worth buying from, that we do have good quality, that we have good-looking games, and, of course, good games.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And now I just got a flash. You were talking about the artwork being subjective. The same year that Sidereo Confluence came out, it was in 2017, you actually also got another game called Empires. And both games came up at the same time. They came out, I think, in Essen, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think they came out a few months apart. I believe Sidereal came out at Origins in June, and Empires came out in October.
Okay. So when I played both games, I was actually wondering, and it's not necessarily bad, but was there a reason why there were two games with the same, not necessarily the same team, but mechanically speaking, there are similarities in the sense that both games are for 4 to 9 players. I think 5 to 10 for Empires.
2 to 10,
yes, exactly. And then Empires is obviously less it's less complicated than Sidereo Confluence, but still, those are two negotiation games. Was this something that was meant to be, to have two negotiation games, although the style is not necessarily very popular
right.
negotiation?
So it's that's a tough call. That was probably an error on our part. We probably should have waited on Empire. So what happened was, so we got Sidereal, and we're doing it. It's coming out. But when I saw Empire, I think the November before the Essen release. So we're talking. I released it 11 months later when I saw it. It's a great game. It tested great. Well, I saw it at BoardGameGeek.com convention, BoardGameGeekCon. We played the game. It was amazing. Yes, it was another negotiation game, but I love the fact that it went 2 to 10 players. I love the fact that one, you can trade everything, even VPs. And I love the fact that it was a Euro-type feel as opposed to Sidereal, which was an Ameritrash, again, if we want to use the term, Ameritrash-type feel. So I guess why we released two is because, obviously, I didn't know if Sidereal was going to be popular or not. And then I thought that, well, maybe the people who will like Empires want the negotiation but don't want the science fiction setting of Sidereal, and therefore will like the more grounded political, you know, 1700s or whatever, 1600s European powers involved. And I think that was it. I thought it would be two different audiences, and then therefore hopefully find two different success points to it. So it really, I didn't think it was going to, the main thing was I didn't think it was going to cannibalize each other. Even though they were both negotiation games, I felt they were so different that they would not have the same audience. That was my feeling. But on retrospect, I probably still should have waited longer on Empires.
Okay. Well, it's not a criticism on my part because I actually own both games and basically I know when to take out Empires and when to take out Sidereal Confluence.
Nice.
But obviously those are two great games. Also, I think on this year 2017, you also got Tournament at Kenlock that came out. Was it 2017?
Yeah.
This game is so good. Seriously, it's a really hidden gem. So why of this game? How did it happen? And why this twist on trick taking?
Well, so first of all, I'm a trick taking fan. I do love trick-taking games and the like, and I say that because I know there's ladder-climbing games, but to me, they still fall in the trick-taking category. So one of my favorite is Tichu. I'm a big fan of that. So trick-taking games have a soft spot for me in my heart, and I was at a prototype show in Florida when I met Ken Shannon, who... while I brought some games to test for myself, of course, I was meeting with other designers, and he was at that show, and he said, "Hey, can I show you this game that I have?" And it was Tournament at Camelot, and I loved the, I played it, and I said, "This is amazing." I love the art that he had planned for it, which was the final art that you saw. That was all part of his pitch and available, and I thought that was great. I will say that the game had another mechanic that we got rid of, one major mechanic that we got rid of, and I said, "Nope, keep it to just this part." And he agreed, and that was it. I found it probably... Wow, did I find it in 2017 and come out with it in 2017? It could have been 2016. I saw it, but I'm not sure. But it was definitely in... February. So I think it was February 16 or February 17, and then the game released later in 17. But yeah, it was one of those things where, someone showed me the game, and I fell in love with it. I love trick-taking. I love what it did to it. I love the theme. It was great.
Awesome. So then obviously 2020, I'm expecting a tournament at Avalon.
Yep.
What's going to be different in this new standalone game?
I think the focus is going to be a little more on magic. Alchemy is no longer a wild suit; it's its own suit. You have Morgana Le Fay. You have sorceresses, apprentices. Or sorceress apprentices. There's new godsend cards. The other thing is there's some locations where if you're the host of the location, you get a special little bonus. But I think it's just the fact that the characters are a little more different in what they do. There's a more focus on magic. But you can mix and match Camelot cards with Avalon. And in fact, in the rulebook, there's a way to mix completely both decks and go up to 8 players to play.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and you'll notice a lot of alliances. I think that might be it also. There's, I think, more reasons to sort of, not like official alliances, but where you're definitely going to be working with other people to mess around with the trick. You'll see that definitely in the 7-8 player, I think it's called the Chaos variant, where you play with both Camelot and Avalon. But you could play Camelot with the Avalon Godsend cards and vice versa. You can, play some of the characters from Avalon with Camelot and vice versa and so on. So even though it's a standalone expansion or a standalone game, you can mix it with Camelot.
Awesome. And now we're talking about just the last year. I got a copy of Flotilla, and wow, I gotta say, it's really amazing. I just had the chance to do two games so far, but I want to play it more. I want to do a review of this game, but so far I feel that I need more games to make my head around it, but so far I really, really like it.
Thank you.
I guess this game, once again, you found it, and then you enjoyed just the gameplay and how the flow of the game was.
Yep. It's another thing. It got pitched to me at a show. I sat down, played it, and I love the, the simple Concordia card mechanic. Play a card, do its action. Fine, cool. But obviously that idea of that twist where at any point during the game you can flip to this other type of game that you're going to play. But it's still the same. The rules don't change. You're interacting with the other players. You don't have to flip to the sky side. That really sold me on the game.
Mm-hmm. And also I feel that the scoring part is really it gets really interesting because, yes, you can focus on the scoring tiles, but you can also score while being on the sky side. You can score with your flotillas, but at the same time, if you're starting to get your engine rolling as a sim side, then you can start scoring a lot of points just with the scoring tiles that are up for this game. But even then, every game is going to be different because of the scoring tiles. I feel that these are guidelines for the games, the direction that you can take. And every direction is going to be different depending on the matching of these three tiles.
Correct. You have to prepare, right? You have to think if you're going to change, are you ready to change? Do you have the right tiles in play? Do you have the right cards? Because they flip also. And then it's the flow of the game. What are the other players doing? And what other things have been found? These are the things you have to all take into consideration to determine if you are ready or even should consider flipping to the sky side.
Awesome. And now we're in 2020, so we spoke about tournament at Avalon. We spoke about the new edition for Studio Confluence. There's a new edition coming for Clash of Cultures. So what's going to be different from the original one that we saw coming out a few years ago?
So the base game will the box will come with the base game and the Civilizations expansion all in one. Well as the Aztec promo that we had. So, boom, you're going to get everything in there. It's all new sculpts, so all new models. We're going to have sculpted wonders. We should have at least seven wonders that will be sculpted in the game. And then there are just some rule tweaks here and there. A couple of changes, I believe, with the barbarians a bit. So just updated stuff. Christian, looked at the rules, made changes to some of the cards, some of the rules, some of the tech, and the barbarians to overall give it a very new feeling to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. A quick observation. I just went on BoardGameGeek, and the first edition was released by Zeman. Now it's released with WizKids. Is this just circumstantial, or is it really because you actually moved to WizKids that Christian decided to follow you with all that?
I've been in touch with Christian. Every so often I ask him, hey, what's up? Are you working on anything? And so on and so forth. And then I heard that Clash was returned to him. The design was returned to his rights were back. And then I approached him. I could be wrong. He might have came back to me and said, hey, are you interested in this? But basically, we mutually thought about, maybe this is something we can bring back because it was out of print for so long. And of course, the Civilizations expansion was only had the one print run and was out of print for so long, and copies are going for $150 and $200 online. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just my staying in contact with Christian that afforded me the opportunity to score Clash of Cultures.
Awesome. And then, other than that, do you have anything in mind for the upcoming news or upcoming month that we should be aware of?
I mean, we got lots of games coming out. I was in Nuremberg Toy Fair recently, showing off a bunch of things. We have games. I think you'll see them on BGG. So if you want to read up about them, and I think some of them will have the rules up. Meeple Towers, Etten. I think Etten is coming out soon, and I think that's going to be one to watch. That's mm-hmm. also sort of a big game, 2-8 player game. It has a Seven Wonders feel in that, yes, you're playing an 8-player game, but you're only interacting with the person to your left and to your right. But you're drafting cards with them, and one person is your ally, the other is your enemy. And the object of the game is you are going to combine your score with your ally's score, and you're going to try to have the highest alliance score among all the other alliances on the table. And with each, you can buy multiple boxes of this game and play a 16, a 24, a 32-player game all at the same time. And it's going to be 45 minutes to an hour. So that's Etten. You can see that on BGG. I mentioned Meeple Towers. That's a nice little Euro. Last Second Quest is a very fun real-time. You're grabbing items for a quest from the middle of the table. You're trying to get required items from the quest and avoid forbidden items. But you always have to defend your choices. Let's say the quest requires a weapon, and I have a shovel in my storage, and I say, hey, I get a point because my shovel's a weapon. But someone can say, well, a shovel's not a weapon, it's a tool. And I say, well, if I hit you with it, I can kill you, so I think it's a weapon. And, of course, all the players around the table will then, everybody will take a vote, and the winner, the majority, will determine who won that debate and what happens with the item. So that's coming out. We have another game coming out by one of the authors of Flotilla called mm-hmm. Gates of Mara. That should be coming out around Essen time. I believe we announced, or definitely the designer have, we have a new game by Jeff Engelstein. It's a roll and write game, but you're playing pinball.
Okay.
So, yes, it's a pinball-themed roll-and-write. The plan is to have four different machines in the game, goes 2-4 players, or actually 1-4, sorry, you can't play solo. 1-4 players, you could play with four differently themed pinball machines in the game. I'm very excited about that. We have probably another, 10 to 12 other games that are going to be coming out, if not a little more. Some we have not announced yet, but hopefully soon. But things, Red Cap Ruckus is another one. I'm just trying to remember them all. Red Cap Ruckus, Stampede, I think is going to be a very nice card game in the same vein of a lot of my smaller card games, like Fantasy Realms, or Kibble Scuffle, or Kodachi. It's a very nice, very fun, family-friendly game. So definitely be on the lookout for Stampede. I think that's going to come out around May or June.
Awesome.
Yeah, and there's more stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really thrilled by all of that. Now maybe I'd like to ask you a few questions about publishing and editing in itself. So what's your motto for, let's say I'm someone with a prototype. What are you looking for, and what do you want as an editor? What are you expecting of me, and what do you want to see in a game?
Well, I want to be wowed. That's what it really comes down to. And that It's just something I can't explain. It's something that when I play the game, I'll know it when I feel it. So I'm not looking for any particular game. I'm not trying to fill a niche, for example. Although if it does, it might turn me towards saying yes to it because I'm thinking, oh, I don't have a game like this and it's good, then maybe I'll do it. So you're trying to check off a lot of boxes and trying to make meet my needs as best as possible, but I have to weigh all these factors. There's so many games that are out there now. Games that I'm passing on now, I probably would have done 10 years ago or so, but good is not good enough. It's really got to be great. It's got to be exciting. And really, it's a personal thing. So, I mean, I might say no because just to me, it was not, you know, exciting or wow or whatever. To someone else, it might be, but, you know, I can only be me.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Zima Moore WizKids is usually using Kickstarter. What do you think about this this platform?
I don't like established companies using Kickstarter. To me, the Kickstarter idea is, you know, someone with a dream, they don't have the funds, and they really want to, you know, get their dream out there. And I feel that's the spirit of what Kickstarter should be. But, I mean, a lot of established companies are using it as marketing and whatnot. You know, I don't like that. I understand it. I absolutely see the reason for it. But I prefer to have Kickstarter be the funding of dreams of designers, not marketing for established companies.
Hmm. And do you think it has been? Do you think Kickstarter now? I think that everyone can agree that Kickstarter has been something very positive. But do you think that the platform is still positive for the hobby nowadays? Although there are so many games that are founded, or other games that are presented on Kickstarter, do you think it's still positive for the industry? Or do you think we have reached this kind of this ratio that we're off limits now?
I don't know. I think it's absolutely contributing to the glut of releases in the last few years. While yes, there are good games up there, but there's way, way, way more bad games or games that don't even see the light of day, even if they're funded or whatnot. So I think it's contributing negatively. I'm not going to say disastrously, but at least a little negatively, in that there's just a lot of stuff out there that, you know, probably would not have been out there, if they went the standard publisher route. But again, I'm not going to stop somebody from dreaming their dream, right? If they want to be a designer and they get their product up there, and if people believe in them and so on and help fund it, I mean, who am I to say no? It's a tough thing. For the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Do you think it's... how does it affect, let's say, your game scouting? And how does it affect established publishers and editors?
I don't know what it does for others. For me, if a game is... So I get pitched a lot games that were on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever other crowdfunding platform where they say, hey, you know, I had my game funded, da-da-da. Do you guys want to take it for a wide release or whatnot? So our policy currently is any game that was crowdfunded, whether it funded or not, we don't consider. So that's the big thing. The other thing is I go to many shows where I see a game that looks interesting, and then all of a sudden I spot a flyer or a banner that says coming to Kickstarter soon, and I'm like, all right, well then I guess I'm just going to avoid it. Sometimes I'll talk with the designer or the publisher there before it gets on Kickstarter. And if it's something I really, really like, I'll say, is Kickstarter your definite method? And some of them had said, well, no, I'm willing to make a different deal if we can. And then I'd consider it. I would take games back. But if something is really ready to go on Kickstarter or has been on Kickstarter, I just don't consider it anymore. And that does happen a lot. I go to a lot of shows now, especially prototype shows, where so many of the games that I walk by, are being crowdfunded, are currently on Kickstarter, or about to go to Kickstarter. So it has limited the amount of material out there, but there's still so much out there that I'm not hurting in finding games.
Okay, I understand. So there's still space for there's still room for everyone.
Absolutely. I was at a show this weekend and I tested a few games, and there's one that I'm ready to sign. It was really, really good. It was fun. And then there was like one other one that I'm interested in. So yeah, there's no shortage of games for a publisher to seek. And to test.
Awesome. If I have a prototype, how do I get in contact with you? Do I simply go on Wizkid's website and then I send you an email, or should I just go to a prototype festival?
Well, the first thing is, yes, we do have a website where there's a submission form. So you can absolutely fill out that form. That comes to me, and I'll check it out. You just got a pitch. There are fields that you can fill out, but again, you want to have a nice pitch. You want to try to have a sell sheet ready. You don't have to have a video, but if you have a video a little bit explaining the game, that's fine. A short video. So yeah, the first thing is, if you don't have my email address, you're not going to a show or whatnot, that's the best way to contact me, is through our submission form. Then the next best thing is, if you know I'm going to a particular show, you can try to contact me and set up an appointment to meet me at the show. And then the third way is, if I'm at the show and you see me, you can usually come up to me and say, hey, do you have time to look at my stuff? And usually I do, and I would try to make a schedule with you to meet you during the show.
Awesome. Now we spoke a lot about publishing and editing, and we spoke a lot about WizKids and everything. Now I'd like to know a bit about you as a gamer, but also as a person. Do you have any favorite author? Do you have any favorite when this person puts a game out, you just run to your FLGS and then you just buy it or anything?
No, I don't have someone that I adore that much to immediately buy their game. That doesn't mean I don't like different designers, of course. Obviously, I do. I do. I'm fans of a lot of them. But no, there's no one that would get me that I know of offhand. I'm thinking where I would say, oh my god, I must have this game. To me, it's all probably more game-centric rather than author-centric or designer-centric.
Okay. Can you name me a few of these authors that you like very much?
I mean, in no order. I mean, I do like Matt Leacock. I like Mario Papini. He's a fun guy. Ken Shannon, a newcomer that we've been publishing. Andrew Parks is amazing and underrated, I think. Of course, Vlada Shvatel. That's some in a nutshell. There's more, but those are some good names, I think.
Mm-hmm. And as a gamer, you also said that you're more about buying the game rather than buying the game from the author. I guess that your tastes as a gamer, a very in close relationship to your the way you are publishing and editing games.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you see my Z-Man catalog, you're basically seeing the stuff that I like. I don't like just one kind of thing. I'm very eclectic. I love many different types of games, and I think my publishing record shows that, because I pretty much publish, you know, things that I really liked. You know, there might be some exceptions here and there for other reasons, but for the most part, if I really like the game, that's why I'm doing it.
Awesome. Now, okay, so maybe, do you have a grail game, and B, if not a grail game, a game that any experienced player should be playing, or, and C, maybe three or four games that you definitely recommend that are definitely in your top 10, not necessarily in any or in ascending or order or anything, just out of the blue like that?
I think I may have missed the second question, but the first one, if you're saying a grail game, I would love to have published, I think, Magic Realm.
Okay.
That's one I've, like, on and off been trying to seek and all that, but I've pretty much all but given up on that game. But I think that would be amazing to try to bring to the modern market. What was the second thing?
Do you have any game that you think that any experienced player should try?
Gotcha. Good question. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, it would be a lot. Again, I'm going to look through my list here. Well, I think they should play Santiago if they have five players. That's for sure. I think that's really a lot of fun. I think people should try Feudo. I still think it's a wonderful, wonderful game. What else? Yeah, it's hard to tell, right? Because everyone's tastes are very, very different. You know, again, I'm looking at the stuff that I've done that I feel people should really make sure they play. Let's see, is there more? Going through my list. Boy, there's so many things here. Let's see. I don't know. Good question. Otherwise, sure. Hey, play Earth Reborn, Wars of the Roses, if you can play four player, I think, specifically. I think Ideology is an amazing game. Again, my first board game that I publish, and I still really feel that's a great game. I think it still stands the test of time. I'm not sure. I've not played it in probably, 15 years or so. Yeah, I mean, No Thanks, of course. They should play that. Arboretum is still a wonderful game that packs a punch for a small card game.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I can go on and on. I'm sure I can find a reason to play most of the games for whatever thing. But, yeah, I would say that. Some of the stuff are a lot heavier or whatnot. That I don't know if many people would be interested in. I'm just looking. Yeah, I'll stop there. I think that's probably fine. You know, there's more. You know, but there, that's fine.
That's fine. And so yes. And see.
My favorite.
Favorite games. Maybe three or four. Not necessarily your top three of all time, but just.
I did mention I love Tichu, so that's probably there. I'm a big Axis and Allies fan.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, right now I'm loving playing Age of Dirt. And I know I'm not trying to sell it or market it or whatnot, but, I played it recently and we just had a blast.
Age of Dirt. Okay.
Yeah, we released that in November. It was supposed to be for Essen, but the palette was stuck in customs and not released in time for the show. We did demo it at Essen, but it officially, I think it started coming out in stores like right after Essen or in November. I don't remember, but I mean, I played it recently and it was just a lot of fun.
Okay. I'm actually, you just piqued my curiosity. I'm, just to give you a sort of background for me, I'm more of the, we're three doing the YouTube channel, and I'm more of the type of guy who's looking for underground games all the time, so games that have been completely under the radar. So I love when there are games that I didn't hear anything. And Age of Dirt is one of them, unfortunately, just because I feel that probably Essen is just a huge festival where there are so many games that are coming out.
Absolutely.
And also the fact that you just mentioned that basically the selling was a bit delayed due to production and everything. So yeah, but you know what? I'm actually very curious about. I'm probably gonna try to find a copy or anything.
Oh great! Thank you.
Speaking of which, are there games that you think, so we mentioned campaign managers, so you said that this one should have gotten more attention, but this was as a designer, now as a gamer and for you, to your own taste, are there games that you think it could be either a game that was lost in through the ages or something like that, or a game that that we didn't see at all in the last years due to the fact that there are so many games. So are there games like that that you would like to have a voice for?
I mean, I can, but I don't want to come off like I'm trying to sell the games. I don't want to feel like I'm using this as a platform to market the games that we're coming out with. So I'll just say that, you know what, maybe go to Board Game Geek, do a filter on WizKids games, and see some of our games over the last 2 years or so that I feel some of them, actually since 2007, yeah, since 2017 at least, that I feel got lost in the shuffle for whatever reason. I'll mention one because it was from 2017. It's also a Ken Shannon game. It's called Approaching Dawn, The Witching Hour. I think that is a severely overlooked game. But I'll stop there. Again, I don't want to use it as a platform to push the games here. I don't want to feel like that.
Okay. Yes. No worries. I don't think our audience is going to see it this way. They know that it's my personal. it's a fun of mine that I want to know more about. Now you just spoke about Approaching Dawn, so of course I'm going to look at this one for sure. That's really, really great. Now, last question. If we can close it up like this. What do you expect for the hobby for the next 5 years or so? And what do you apprehend for the next 5 years for the hobby?
You mean like what do I predict for it?
Yes, what do you predict? What would you like to see? Yes, prediction. Yes, those are two different things, actually. So prediction, what would you like to see, and what do you apprehend to see?
Well, honestly, they're probably related. I would like to see board games still, selling well, and I predict they will keep selling well. I think because any entertainment medium is going to always want new material, and we're going to keep coming out with it. So I think board games will still be around. It'll still be of interest. It'll probably grow bigger. How much bigger, that I don't know, but I don't think it's going to shrink. Now, maybe the industry might shrink a little bit, as people merge, some people go out of business and other things, But I think, you know, the board games are just going to keep coming out. I know a lot of people ask me about technology and stuff. Maybe there'll be more app-required board games out there, but I don't think that's going to be the norm. So I'm not predicting that as a normal thing. And I think technology will, for the most part, primarily stay away from board games. Or again, if there's any apps, there'll be more helper apps rather than integral. Or at least not, you know, not as the as the thing that will take over. Sure, there might be some games that come out like that, but I don't think that's going to be the norm for board gaming. So yeah, we're going to still chug along. We're going to come out with games. I'm assuming we'll see probably like one new mechanic or something where people go, wow, I can't believe, someone thought of that. But I don't think it's going to be technologically driven. I think the industry will still be relatively healthy.
Awesome. Alright, so now before we leave, I'd just like to ask you a few questions coming from our audience. Those are great questions, by the way. I'm very, very amazed. There was a lot of positive questions about you.
Is this live? I mean, are they? Did they?
No, it's not live. No.
Right.
It's just that I asked the question beforehand.
Okay, gotcha. Just want to make sure. I mean, not that I care. I was just wondering. But yeah, so you told people you were doing this interview. If you have questions, right?
No. Yeah. Exactly. Gotcha. No, exactly. So that's what we did. So we have a private Facebook group.
Sweet.
Where I post my upcoming interviews. And a lot of people are asking questions. So the first questions that came up, and I think it's a really, really good question, comes from Steve Provost Pocket. He asks, how did you live the after pandemic concerning peer pressure, concerning maybe some pressure coming from yourself to reproduce a success like pandemic was? We could mention also Agricola, for example. So how did you live all this success?
I'm saying, how did I, what with the success?
The aftermath of pandemic.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So, so the success gave me the confidence. So here's a joke with a friend of mine who's helped me for a long time. He used to come to like all the conventions and help me, my friend Paul. So we'd always make a joke about Z-Man saying, how many disasters are we away from closing our doors? So in the beginning, it was always one, right? One major disaster and boom, we have no more money. We have to close our doors. As the years went by, it went up to two, it went up to three. And when I say disaster, I'm talking about where, you know, let's say I tried to do 10,000 games of something and we sold 500, you know, that kind of disaster, or a bunch of games that just stopped selling, those kind of disasters. And again, it would be one, two, three. So when it came to 2008 or towards the end of 2008, when Pandemic and Agricola were both successes, I was at the point where, you know what, I don't need to count anymore. I'm pretty safe from shutting my doors from one or two or three disasters. It was obviously a lot more. It would have taken probably, you know, six, seven, eight disasters, but I didn't have to worry about it anymore, and I could take even more risks than I had done in the past.
Okay, and did you feel any pressure from other people or from people within the industry and expectations, did they go higher up from that point towards the production of Z-Man or even expectations of yourself?
I think I had a very good reputation even up until that point. I went to a lot of shows. I have a lot of friends in all the tiers, retailers, consumers, distributors. So a lot of people knew me. I'm very transparent, and I posted on BGG a lot, and I openly talked about, you know, things that so people could understand, you know, what's happening with publishing and so on, or a particular game. I was very responsive with customer service. So I think I had a good reputation. So when these two games hit, I think people just congratulated me more. But I don't think they said, uh-oh, now you better, you know, you better have every game do this sort of level. I never felt that sort of pressure at all.
Okay, awesome. So that's really good. Actually, it's you turned everything into your own advantage in the sense that everything came out positive from pandemic for your company.
Yeah, and what you're right. You know, it's not an overnight success, right? I worked for, you know, 8 years slowly building up everything and my reputation, and my the company was doing well, and it was actually in 2007 especially the success was growing because I released I think Duel in the Dark, Prophecy, and 1960 all came out in 2007, and those were larger games that did very, very well. So that was already propelling me to more popularity, and then Pandemic and Agricola solidified it.
Yeah, of course, exactly.
And if anything, just one thing, if anything, I had pressure not to do Pandemic because people were saying, Zev, nobody wants co-op games. You know, it's crazy. You're gonna kill yourself here. No one wants to buy this game. And I said, well, you know what? I got to do it. It's such a great game. It's an amazing feeling playing it. I'm gonna give it a shot. And luckily, I went with my instincts there, my gut.
Your gut feeling, yeah. I love this this attitude of yours to go with your gut feeling rather than just starting to calculate everything. I really enjoy that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And maybe a last question, because all the other questions were actually in the interview that we did. We have Stefan, who actually is asking that has it ever happened that we show you a game, we show you a prototype with amazing mechanics. Mechanically speaking, it is amazing. But with an awful team, the team does not match at all with the game. So, and did you impose a new theme before publishing this game?
Ah, good question. So the only one that came up to mind was a Knizia game that we did. I forgot what it was called. It was like Fantasy Wizards or something it was called. And I liked the game, not that it had a great mechanic, but it was a fun game. And it was a card game. And I said, you know what? I just don't feel like doing another fantasy-themed game. You know, this game is about, you know, keeping up with your neighbor, what we call it, keeping up with the Joneses, where, you know, your neighbor has one thing, then you got to one-up them, then they one-up you, and so on. And that's what the game felt like. And I said, hey, why don't I do a game where it's, you know, all these suburbanites are getting weapons, and each number on the card is a stronger weapon, and that became the game Escalation that I published. So that one, where I just had a very fresh, very different theme than what it was, only just to get away for some more fantasy stuff. But it could have been anything, really. But that answers the question, in that, yes, I changed the theme. I'm trying to remember if there's any other. I'm looking just quickly. I don't remember if I've severely changed the theme on something. Just doing a quick glance at my games. No, I mean, other than that, I think I pretty much kept. I think I pretty much kept the theme that was proposed to me. For the most part, The only one maybe where... Oh, actually, WizKids released this. We got the rights to do... rights back from Christophe Bollinger to do his Fantasy Business. And, you know, we have the Star Trek license. And I say, oh, man, this would be cool as a Ferengi thing. So we actually revamped it as Galactic Enterprises, where you're playing Ferengi selling... You know, all the stuff from the Star Trek universe and backstabbing each other and so on. And that worked fantastically, theme-wise. So maybe that's also one where we change the theme. And that's a fun game also. If you haven't played Fantasy Business or the new version, Galactic Enterprises, I highly recommend it. So that one also, you know, you talk about negotiation. That one is where you can negotiate, but you do a little backstabbing. But it's sort of in secret in that... You know, because you all talk about selling stuff at a particular price, and then, like, when you write down the price, you can change it. So it's a lot of fun as well. I think that's probably the other example of a major theme change. I can't think anything else that comes to mind where I change the theme so much.
Awesome. All right. And a last question coming from me. I know I'm not the audience, but anyway, just pop up on my mind. How many games do you own?
I am at about... So I have my Z-Man archive, right? One of each Z-Man game. I have one of each WizKids game that I've done. And then I have my collection. But honestly, I think I'm just at around 500, maybe a little over 500.
Okay.
It used to be over 1,000, but I kept moving a lot, and I got really, really tired of repacking my games, and I said, I'm done, and I sold about, at the time, I sold about 600 or 700 games. It was crazy. I was like, I'm done. Because Z-Man itself has about 300 games, or so, with some expansions, of course, and everything. I think I'm at about 500, a little over.
Okay, that's a fair amount. But,
yeah.
Not too much. You just kept the necessary. Let's just say it like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I want to have look at the stuff that I've done in the past. And again, Z-Man has about 300 or so. WizKids, I think I'm up to about 60 right now. So really, and I don't normally get more games, but obviously every WizKids game that I publish, that goes into my collection. So that's pretty much where the growth is for the most part.
Awesome. All right. So thank you very, very much. Zeb, do you have anything else to say before the end of the interview? Is there anything you'd like to tell our audience?
Do you want to know what the original name of Sidereal Confluence was?
Yes, of course.
or did Tau Ceti tell you?
No, Tau Ceti didn't tell me.
So a lot of people ask, you know, where did I come up with that name? So the original name of the game was called Trade Empires. So you could see, not an exciting name.
No, not at all.
So Tau Ceti and I, we brainstormed. I went to thesaurus.com, and I tried thinking, what makes sense here? And, you know, taking the theme of the game and then coming up with things like, okay, what is, what do these words mean? Okay, we want something science fiction, but I didn't want to use galactic because that was used a lot. I didn't want to use federation. So I said, we need to come up with a word that just hasn't been used that pertains to outer space or whatnot. And that's where sidereal came from. And then confluence is a coming together. And we put that definition on the box because many people didn't know how to pronounce it, didn't know what it meant. And I think actually that was in our favor because it made people think about it and look up what it meant. So anyhow, that's just a little story where Trade Empires became Sidereal Confluence. And I'd like to tell people that I used up all my good credit on thesaurus.com. So I can't come up with any other better names for other games at times, especially like when we did Fantasy Realms, where we had no idea what to change that to. And I said, well, I spent all my credit at Thesaurus, so I'm just going to stick with Fantasy Realms.
That's an awesome story.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very, very appreciated.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Alors, merci beaucoup de nous avoir écoutés. J'espère que vous avez grandement apprécié. Encore une fois, si vous ne comprenez pas tout à fait tout ce qui s'est passé, n'hésitez pas à nous poser des questions sur dans les commentaires via le vidéo YouTube. N'oubliez pas de nous liker sur Facebook, de vous abonner à notre chaîne, de nous suivre sur Instagram. Et je vous remercie énormément de votre écoute. Et sur ce, je vous souhaite à vous et vos amis un bon jouage. Thank you.